This is Danny Heifetz here to remind you that it's never too early to start thinking about football. Join me with Danny Kelly and Craig Korlbeck on the Ringer Fantasy Football Show all offseason as we dive into the biggest news and topics around the 2024 NFL season. Also, we probably get into really stupid arguments too. That's the Ringer Fantasy Football Show on Spotify.
It's the Ringer NBA Show presented by FanDuel. The road to the NBA Finals starts now, and FanDuel is the best place to get in on the action. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Quick Bets, which are back and better than ever for the NBA playoffs on FanDuel. Find out what you're looking for faster and easier with more props right at your fingertips. You can check out live bets like three-minute markets and exclusive live bets like quarter player props, player assist combos, and more. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available. And listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 years and older, 18 and older in D.C., and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com.
This episode is supported by State Farm. Man, I remember when I first got into a car accident, it was pure frustration because I did not have State Farm. And now that I do have State Farm, it is an exclamation of pure joy. But the only words that you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com.
Hello and welcome to the Ringer NBA live YouTube experience. I'm Big Waz, aka Wazzy Lambre, and I'm joined by my brother James Kyle. Man, what's going on, bro?
Not too much, Waz. Enjoying. I'm electrified by the good basketball tonight. I mean, shades of it. There were exciting moments, yeah. Right? But you know, we had some moments where it got a little stale, but. Overall, we had some pretty impressive performances to talk about, I thought.
Yeah, some really cool storylines. The Magic tied up their series against the Cleveland Cavaliers, sending that back to a game 7 in Cleveland. And just wrapped up, we got a final score in Dallas of 114-101. The Clippers have now been eliminated. The Dallas Mavericks are moving on to the second round to play against the OKC Thunder. We'll have plenty to say about that matchup in a little bit. But I do just want to talk about the game and the series in a microcosm, Kyle, because for me, it felt like basically 2 or 3 games ago, after the Clippers got to that enormous 30-point lead that they almost coughed up, their offense essentially started sputtering. Dallas's defense, which has been their hallmark since the All-Star break, essentially, ratcheted up. They ground him into a pulp. And I think this game was no different. It was, you know, essentially tied up at halftime. And then in the third quarter, they put the screws to these guys, a 35-20 third quarter. And that was basically all she wrote the rest of the way. Talk to me about what you saw out there, bro.
I mean, the thing that jumps off the screen is just the athleticism disparity compared to the things that we saw dating back to, you know, when Luka came into the league and we first started like wondering, we were like, well, where is this guy on his schedule? Like, is he a real dude? And he showed us immediately that he was, but like some of the first real tests that he had, you know, in the bubble and were against those really long athletic Clippers teams that were deep. And we were like, ugh. And then we were just kind of in that heliocentric kind of mode he was in where we were like, well, we just got to get some catch and shoot guys around him and one lob threat and just kind of get him by because he was such a floor raiser that you were like, well, we're not going to get a high draft pick. But over the course of time leading, I'll skip all that to where we are now. It's just amazing how much they've overhauled their athleticism, you know, and I think people are going to point to the obvious things like the rim runners like Gafford and PJ Washington and Lively. But dude, you talked about the defense. I think one of the big things was, like, you know, when in that game where they got the big lead and it seemed like the Clippers couldn't miss a shot and Paul George was going wild, you know, getting PJ Washington off of Paul George and putting and getting Derrick Jones Jr. on PG was just a way tougher matchup for PG, because I think, you know, as much as PJ could, like, contain penetration physically and he's solidly built, Derrick Jones is just, like, so fast off his feet. He's so hard to screen because he's so elastic, and he's just such a crazy athlete, man. I mean, so specifically Derrick Jones Jr., but overall the athleticism is just a really, really remarkable job by that team to overhaul all that.
Yeah, being able to start Derrick Jones and Gafford is really what turned the entire thing around. And, you know, obviously Derrick Jones has had a defensive reputation for a long time. And, he's been known to be a somewhat limited offensive guy. But that's the beauty of having Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving on your team. You don't need world-beating talent surrounding them. Guys just have to be competent and be able to hit, you know, some pretty clean looks when Luka and Kyrie get it to you, because those guys are always going to be putting opposing defenses in rotation. And Kyrie, man, I'll be goddamned. Obviously, we know Luka for being able to find guys. He's got a preternatural ability for it. He's one of the best in the league at it. But Kyrie's, his ball moving, his willingness to just play within the role of that offense around what Luka's doing. Lisa Salters even gave a little report during the game where Kyrie's just like, yo, I'm just happy to fit around what's happening around this guy. And I think we got a nice little winning formula. And tonight was no different. I tweeted out that, you know, it's kind of dope to watch Kyrie and his role on this team, where he's made himself into a bit of a junkyard dog player. You know, I compared it to what Josh Hart is doing for the Knicks, except he's also one of the most electrifying offensive players in the history of basketball. And so him coming to his own at this stage of his career, after all of the, you know, a lot of his self-inflicted hiccups of the past, watching this thing coalesce in Dallas has been really cool.
It definitely has. And, you know, it's like we could speculate about, like, kind of what maybe just getting away from some of the situations he was in, like getting somewhere that he could just have some chillness in his life. You know, I was just thinking about how interesting it is that, like, the big three, heavy quotes, in Brooklyn, which history is not going to look on the road. You know, Kyrie sprained his ankle, Harden pulled his hamstring. Who knows what would have happened in that series, because they were kicking Milwaukee's ass. We always kind of glaze over that part. But, you know, those guys, it ended bitterly and they go their separate ways. And it's just been kind of interesting to watch the outcomes, because Harden goes to L.A. and he's blending in. But, you know, the first things that are coming out is about how he's a system. And you start to get the sense that, like, OK, James. You know, and when Kawhi goes down, James is just like, they're asking him to score, and it's kind of inviting James to be old James again. And then Kevin Durant goes and he's following, you know, and it's just interesting to watch the catharsis, I think, in Kyrie's career as one of the more would you say he's the most, like, ball skill wise? He's probably top five all time.
His reputation as when you combine the ball handling, the footwork, the shooting ability, the finishing at the cup with the different angles and the kisses, that's what people always say. He's one of the most skilled basketball players that has ever existed, right? And I think that's why so many guys around the league, you know, they're just slack-jawed around the guys' talent and skill. Like, he's a bit of a cult figure that way, and how guys, like, admire what the craft he has, and him actually putting that to use, right? Because it's one thing to have a quote unquote bag, but Kyrie deploying the bag to make to elevate Dallas on offense. And again, like I said, like, he's actually fighting on defense. He's scrapping for loose balls. He's getting deflections. He's putting his nose in there for rebounds. Like, this is what you want out of your best players, right? So, like, Kyrie's doing that, and he's known for what he's known for. And that can only help but permeate throughout the rest of the team, man. Again, I thought their mentality of just – and again, it's not like the Clippers are running the most complex stuff out there. Let's just say it's not as if their actions are like, this isn't prime Golden State we're talking about here, right? But, you know, you still got to go out and stop that. That these are talented guys. And the fact that they did this, you know, Paul George and James Harden, who Harden had a nice little first half and all of that, but then they just started shutting off their water.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing with like the athleticism on like kind of closeout situations, how like I was saying, how starkly big the gap was between these two teams. And you saw it throughout the game. I mean, I think that Jason Kidd was right in like kind of imploring them to like run, because this team is built to be sort of a half court. Like they have the tools to execute in the half court, and like, you know, you had these two superstars that can score and facilitate from any which way. I was thinking about it like Kyrie and Luka together are almost like a, like, I'm not a baseball person, but they almost remind me of like if a pitcher had two like really weird pitches that they could go to and put them back to back and really throw you off. It's like Kyrie, you know, Luka has this like evasive sort of knuckleball way that he plays that you can't quite figure out where it's going at any time. And then Kyrie is pick whatever pitch you want to go with there. But I just think the two ways that you have to defend them just keeps people off balance. You know, they can go create theirs at any time. And then, you know, I thought there was one play at the end of the game where I think PJ shot a corner three and he followed his miss and just flat out beat Paul George to it. Paul watched it for a second, but PJ got it, kicked it out to the top of the three and to the key, and Kyrie hit a three. I just thought this was kind of a, even when it got close in the second quarter wise, I was like, this just feels like the dam's going to break at any moment. It felt like the Clippers were just spinning plates to stay in it. And finally the dam burst. But I don't know. It never really felt to me like the Clippers were going to win this one.
Yeah, the obviously better team. Obviously the Clippers, the better team in the Mavs won this. Obviously the Clippers are shorthanded without their best player, Kawhi Leonard. You know,
worth mentioning.
Yes, it matters that Kawhi, even when he played in a limited capacity, he did not look like himself. The offense could not function in any proper way. And so that, you know, that's worth mentioning. And so obviously the better team won here. And, you know, before we spin into the next series, I think it is important to just talk a little bit about the Clippers here. What do they do this offseason? Harden's coming up for a contract. Paul George is obviously coming up for a contract. He's going to have suitors. Absolutely. We've been talking about this shiny new stadium, which for what seems like forever, that's finally opening this fall. Like, what do you see as their path this offseason?
God, I mean, it was wild to look out there on that floor at times. Like, you've got, like, Russell Westbrook in the right situation just has no clue how to assert himself. They've tried that rehab project. It's just kind of like, I don't have his deal in front of me, but that one seems like not anything worth keeping in mind. It's definitely tertiary or just icing on the cake at best. Paul George, I mean, you seem to think that he's out of there, right? I mean, I feel like I've heard you contend that pretty consistently, right? I mean, if I were Paul George, I'd be looking for a different situation, honestly. James is gonna want to be there. But if I'm the Clippers, yeah, you do kind of feel painted into a corner here a little bit because, you know, Kawhi, you know, maybe you get one last like squeeze out of that orange out of him, like before, I don't know, before his prime. How much time does he really have left? I don't know. There's no real option that like fills me with a lot of optimism for them, especially in a Western Conference that seems to be gaining momentum with young teams. You've got, you know, Minnesota's coming on. Not so worried about Phoenix, obviously, but Denver has their shit figured out. I just think the Clippers are in a weird spot where they have talent, but I'm just not really super confident. I don't feel like I'm ever going to trust them again. Russ's deal was 2 years, $7.8 million. Yeah, is what Cruz is telling us.
So here's the thing. If the Clippers had a normal superstar, if they had Kawhi, if Kawhi could be right and play consistently and be counted upon, I could be, you know, and I know some of the sign and trade rules are tougher now, especially for teams that are over the cap threshold. I could be persuaded like, oh, maybe they try to facilitate some kind of deal for Paul George where they get a couple of role players back and keep it pushing that way, right? Maybe it's not worth it to pay this one guy, you know, $45 million or whatever it's going to be to retain him for 4 more years. When, you know, we got our superstar, let's surround him with complimentary talent, things of that nature. But the way the team is set up, I feel like they have to have Paul George back.
Well, I was gonna ask you, do you think it's more of a just like if contingent on like if they are healthy and we ran it back, we'd get a vastly different outcome? Or do you think there's a position that is so glaring like that they need an upgrade at? I mean, like defensive anchor. I mean, I know people positionally love Zubac, but JaVale Gafford was kind of punking him at different times tonight. You killed me with that. I mean, do you have a position that you think that is like the most glaring, needs an upgrade?
I mean, you said it though. Athleticism just generally across the board, you know, Russ has still got some of the remnants of his otherworldly athleticism, but that's it. He's the only person that pushes pace on this team. He's the only person that, you know, you'll ever see go in there skying for an offensive rebound or skying for a rebound that he shouldn't have got. Right. Or given a late contest on the help side every now and again, just general athleticism. And I think they do lack for shooting when Kawhi Leonard isn't in there. Like they're playing lineups of Russ, PJ, Plumlee. Like you need shooting. You need actual shooting. Zubac, like you need actual shooting on the floor. So I think athleticism and shooting are positions that they're sorely needing. I think their offseason is going to be fascinating because I've said this once, I'll say it again. James Harden forced his way over there because I'm pretty sure he's got a deal with them in place. I'm curious to see what that deal is. But yeah, I'm going to be fascinated to see what they do in the offseason.
I mean, Harden had enough moments where I feel like he showed that he still had some of his old stuff where I feel like he could inspire enough goodwill to have them keep him around. You know, like I feel like I mean,
$120 million for 4 years?
I don't know. It's bomber, man. I mean,
for 4 years?
It seems like a unique situation with the deep pockets of Mr. Zune and Mr. Whatever it is. The athleticism thing is something they're going to have to upgrade. Like I wrote this down, you know, in the first quarter of this game there were 5 offensive rebound resets and 5 putbacks. And that was just like the Clippers were just in cement. Like, you know, so and throughout this game, it, you know, 14 in the first half of this game, 14 ISOs for the Clippers at 0.214 points per possession. Just no flow, no passing. And maybe that's a function of, you know, just not trusting the other guys. How do you upgrade that? If you know, PG decides that he has his sights somewhere else, like you were talking about, were you talking about you think like maybe a sign and trade type thing where they could upgrade?
Or just straight up get signed into Philadelphia's cap space. Like
that to me feels right, but
he's an obvious Tobias upgrade. Lord knows that he's way better than that dude. And then in that case, like the things that he would be asked to do and how he would be told to operate would be so tertiary to the main action happening in the two-man game, which is they've already developed a pretty sweet two-man game with Maxey and Embiid. I think he slots in pretty beautifully if he wants to go there. Now, the guy has spent his whole career trying to get to Southern California, so I wonder if he's just going to ship himself out east just for a better basketball situation. You wonder if the Clippers are willing to pay him, if he's willing to go. But yeah, man, who knows?
I mean, he spends like the season in Philadelphia. Is that really going to motivate him to not want to go there? I mean, you just kind of go there for your work year and then you go back to LA. That's what all these guys do, right? I mean, is it that powerful of a pull that he wouldn't want to go win? It's hard to know what's important to Paul George. I don't know. He just has these. He looked resigned a lot, and that's just kind of a common trait among a lot of these Clippers guys. It's like, you know, Terrence Mann fights his ass off. Zubac does too. Norm plays hard. But when you have this, like, Paul George and Harden have this history of, like, when they see down the road, if they see that, like, there's bad weather ahead, they're just like, I'm just going to get off at this exit, guys. I'm not really interested
not,
in taking
Not you accusing them of running from the grind, Kyle.
I just think I don't know. For me, in the basketball sense, it makes the most sense for PG to go and do that. But yeah,
I would love to see it. I think it would make the East race fascinating next year. But yeah, I'm sure we'll have plenty of time to talk Clippers and Philadelphia because they got their asses eliminated yesterday too. go New York, go New York, go! We'll get to them maybe at the towards the end of this, but I do want to spin it forward, man. Just quickly, what are your initial thoughts about this matchup? This is going to be fun. The Knicks-Sixers series, even if it only went six games, I think it satiated us in our, like, when we think about the playoffs in our mind's eye, when we're away from it, we're thinking about series like Knicks and Sixers, but in reality, in the first round, most of this shit is like OKC and New Orleans, right?
Yeah.
Most of this is Boston and Miami. Most of it is like not even close. The Bucks getting smoked without their players, right? The second round is really when the playoffs begin in earnest, for real, for real. And this is going to be another slugfest. The Western Conference is just shaped out. The playoffs have just shaped out beautifully. Of course, OKC, just an incredibly exciting story. The upstarts, you know, J-Dub, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, Chet Holmgren, my guy, Full Court Fitz alum. We all know what OKC is bringing to the table in terms of youth and energy and pace. And, you know, they bring this fun, loving group post-game interview and, oh, we love each other and all of that. And then Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving, man, this is going to be so freaking fun.
It is. It's this series and Nuggets Wolves are two that just it's just appointment television if you love basketball. I mean, you were talking about the first round. I mean, it's pretty true. We had a lot that were like, yeah, that was interesting, and it just kind of fizzles into a lot of the like game chart things where you can chart the leads. It just kind of goes off in one direction, and you're like, all right, yeah, that was interesting for a little bit. A lot of arguments, a lot of solid arguments for going back to five games. I think, you know, the playoffs of my youth. You know, where we only had to watch, you know, Bullets Wizards for five games or whatever the case may be. But
three games, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Wouldn't you love to get out of there in three in some cases? Yeah. Like the Miami Boston one, like, let's get out of here in three. What are we doing here? So, yeah, this OKC, the first thing that catches my eye, I mean, you have to kind of start from like the biggest, you know, the macro kind of storylines here, 35,000 feet, and that is stars. I mean, like Star Wars, you know, pardon the thing is like that's what the playoffs are about a lot of the time. And in this series in particular, Dallas's stars were just fresher and just came for and they had a better, you know, roster construction around them. But if I look at OKC, like comparing them to like the Nola situation, Nola's star situation was off. You know, Zion obviously wasn't even there. I think it would have made a world of difference if he had been there for matchups. But then Ingram just kind of didn't physically look right at all. And Lou Dort is not the man that you want to see if you're not physically feeling okay, especially if you're Brandon Ingram's.
Oh, my God.
You're a skinny 6'9" guy.
He's a bear.
Yeah. You don't want anything to do with him. So for me, I see this and I'm like, we know Shea is going to get rolling. I'm sure. Do you think Derek Jones is probably going to get the Shea assignment?
He's the Shea matchup. Yep.
Yeah. And then the other thing too is just like I see an opening for Jalen Williams or Chet, but most likely Jalen Williams to be like, hey man, like where are you really? If you want to like make a definitive statement, a playoff statement, like, you know, announce your arrival in a big way, I think that this series is going to be a sort of a set table for him to do that.
Yeah, and another way that I think it's set up pretty sweet and nice for them is that Dallas probably can be more physical, but they're not their size advantage is not going to be functional, right? The Thunder are not going to have to send two. You know, when Gafford gets the ball down low or Lively gets the ball down low, they're going to feel comfortable doing that, right? And so that, I think, is going to line up very nicely for them on that end. And like you said about J-Dub, like Derrick Jones Jr., yes, incredible defender. He's made himself pretty elite. I don't know that we can say that about PJ Washington, right? Obviously, we can't say that about Luka Doncic, right? And so you wonder, and you know, some Josh Green, like he's a good energy guy, but I don't know that you're necessarily comfortable with just Josh Green guarding J-Dub out there on the island. So I think they're going to be able to get Dallas in rotation pretty consistently. And that's when OKC, man, that's when they start really rolling downhill and just, you know, getting, spraying that thing out to their bombers, because they got some real dudes that could shoot on this team. And so it's going to be really fun.
Yeah, you mentioned, I wanted to mention on the Gafford thing, you talked about him catching in space and like whether or not you want to worry about that or not. Ty Lue clearly was like fine with him catching in space and making a decision, because I was talking with one of our mutual friends, Mo DeKeel, about this, that like Gafford catching in space is either, it's going to be electrifying in one of two ways. It's going to either be an incredible play like he had against Zubac, where he takes one dribble, probably an offensive foul, and then dunks, or it's just going to be the weirdest, ugliest thing you've ever seen. So that like dynamics between Chet is really, really good at playing those situations. But you made a great point, I think, about like the personnel disparity here between the Clippers and the Thunder. The Thunder just has, if you haven't watched them, I know most of the sickos watching this, you know what I'm going to say, but they hit you from so many different angles with so many different, they have a freaking legion of ball handlers, and they've been the most effective driving team all year. Yes. Whether it's driving, and then, you know, then they have their little pitch backs to Chet and transition. That is going to be an interesting challenge defensively. You know, I know the Dallas guys are competing. I just think the closeout attack is going to be a lot more competent, a lot more relentless, a lot more designed, and a lot more bought in with the Thunder in ways that the Clippers weren't.
So I'm glad you said that, because it's one thing to play five shooters at a time, right? If you don't have a guy, or multiple guys in this case, who can pierce the defense, puncture the defense, and force them to cover both inside and out, commit resources to both, thereby leaving them vulnerable in an area. Like, that's what OKC does. Like, they stretch you out. Like, these guys have to be guarded. There's nobody you want. Even Chet, you cannot just leave him as if he's just some, you know, like he's Jonas Valanciunas, who don't want to shoot no jump shots, right? Like, you actually have to guard the entire freaking court when they're in their half-court offense. And so they are going to challenge Dallas. And that being said, man, they don't got a Luka matchup. Even Lu Dort, as big and portly as he is, he does not have the height. Luka sees right over that man. He's going to see all of his passing angles. He's going to be able to get his turnaround going quite easily. I think his little stutter step game is going to be crazy. He's probably going to bait him into a few like foul trouble periods from game to game. That's the Dallas. And that's why it's important to have a superstar. He becomes this, like, you know, this matchup breaker.
Yeah. Dort, yeah, you mentioned it. Like, he gave Ingram so much trouble just because of the weight and the girth and the lateral mobility and fighting through screens and stuff like that. Luka will.
Ingram can't move him.
Yeah, Luka's going to slow him down. He loves to play that way. That's the matchup. That's always the matchup, because Luka is just, you know, guarding him is just an unsolvable kind of quandary. You know, so I think that's. That is going to be an interesting thing to see how they tackle that. Yeah, I mean, Kyrie would be another one, too. I mean, who do you think is going to draw the Kyrie assignment? Probably by committee, I would assume, because who really can even one-on-one check him like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to put Shea on him, honestly.
Probably.
I think that's the way to go, because Shea ain't quiet as kept, because his offensive game is so, you know, magnetic and just mesmerizing. He's one of the team's best defenders. Like, this guy guards the hell out of people. People don't realize this because he's getting all the MVP chatter and he's an all-star and, you know, he wears the great clothes and all of that stuff. But, like, this dude is a dog on defense. And look, the best players, like, I remember, you know, somebody had tweeted something about Derrick Jones's MVP season, and you had to be there to witness that. It was truly something special. I remember in the Eastern Conference Finals of that year.
Derrick Rose.
In crunch time.
Yeah.
Yeah, Derrick Rose. In crunch time, Derrick Rose just won the MVP. LeBron James was not only carrying the Miami Heat offense, he was guarding that man on an island at the end of games. Straight up, isolation, mano a mano. I get that I got the offensive burden, but I'm doing it on defense too. And I think that's what the best players have to do, and I think that's where we're at with Shea. So I think he does have to kind of take the Kyrie matchup into his own hands. And that's why this stuff is going to be fascinating. These guys are going to be guarding each other's. I think this is going to be a long series. I don't know if you want to do predictions out the gate, but I'll throw it to you first.
Oh, well, you're going to get me in trouble because I'm getting ready to go to OKC. So I don't really want to. Do I want to go down there and show my face? I do agree with you that it's going to go long. I mean, it's tough, man. If you made me pick Dallas's experience, I feel like I just feel like this is, I set it up in the beginning. I just think that this is going to be a test because OKC, this is going to be a bigger challenge for them. Obviously, they're a younger team, and like solving this superstar riddle is going to be, they haven't done anything like this in a series. So I think we're kind of looking for, we're going on data. We don't have that data yet, basically, is what I'm trying to say. I lean towards Dallas's experience because we're talking about guys who have played in tons and tons of playoff games. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all if OKC put pressure on Dallas's defense in a way. But Dallas has improved defensively so much. So I'm kind of going in a circle here. I lean towards Dallas right now. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm tending to lean towards Dallas too. And it's my bias, which is against younger teams. Just the guys that are going to be at the wheel for Dallas, Luka and Kyrie, have seen so many. They've been in more playoff situations than OKC has. And I think at the end of the games, like the collective sort of half-court, pressure-packed knowledge between Luka and Kyrie, I think they're going to be able to execute. Wow, 60% of our poll, our listener poll has picked Dallas too. I think the experience factor is going to finally come in, and it's going to be a long series. And I think Dallas, man, I'm going to pick Dallas in six, actually, because if it goes to seven, you kind of got to take the home team, as far as I'm concerned, in a series that I believe is going to be this close. So I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be hard fought, but Dallas in six. But, like, again, this is not something I'm supremely confident about, right? I think that thing is going to be close and it's going to be exciting. And again, like, we think Jokic is going to win the MVP. Everybody agreed. The other two guys right behind him are Luka and Shea.
Yeah.
Which is just so cool that we get to see these guys go up against each other in this series. So we'll have plenty of time to get to that later on. But yeah, man, got to talk about Dallas and Cleveland.
This episode is supported by State Farm. Man, I remember when I first got into a car accident. It was pure frustration because I did not have State Farm. And now that I do have State Farm, it is an exclamation of pure joy. But the only words that you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com.
This episode is brought to you by Nissan. Level up your next four-wheeled adventure with the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder, built to navigate you to some of Earth's most awe-inspiring spots with seven drive modes and all the power you need. Get the thrill of the drive in every moment of your journey with the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
This episode is brought to you by Visible Wireless. Want a wireless provider that always brings its A-game? Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. And as if that wasn't already a huge win, you could use promo code RINGER20 to receive $20 off your first month. just for listening to us talk about basketball. Not bad, right? You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com and use promo code Ringer20 for data management practices and additional terms. Visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Yeah, man, got to talk about Dallas and Cleveland, 103-96. It was a pretty good game, pretty close throughout the entirety of the game. Nobody ever got up by more than like 6, 7, 8 points. It was, you know, sort of a seesaw battle. And I thought at the end of this game that Cleveland looked absolutely gassed. Mm-hmm. They're playing Marcus Morris Sr., they are just scrambling for anything that isn't, you know, Donovan Mitchell creating one-on-one or in the pick and roll all on his own. And we'll get to the game that he had. He dropped the 50 ball on these cats. And Orlando looked like the fresher legs, man. These guys looked like they could go out and run another 48 by the time this thing was all over. Whereas Cleveland looked like, man, they looked like they were marching on death's door.
Yeah, they struggled to create. You and I were talking about this throughout the game. There are a lot of larger takeaway questions for who Cleveland is. I know that this series is still going, but you saw some of like those stresses tonight. And they're kind of things that have been issues. They're ongoing. So, you know, this game started out. It was like Cleveland was kind of attacking Wendell Carter Jr. and pick and roll and Donovan. And the big thing is that like they were really – Orlando's length wasn't necessarily like hanging back and stifling them in a way that was like, we're just worried about protecting the rim. We're just worried about getting in the gaps and stopping your driving. They were playing up to prevent Garland and Mitchell from getting into that like flare three game. They were taking away a lot of that like side to side screen action stuff and, you know, daring Cleveland to go by them. And they did. They had a lot of success in this game. I was telling you that like the points in the paint differential through three quarters was like 56-26, which is insane. Yeah. If you think if that's the case, then you're like, well, Cleveland probably ran away with this. But I think all this kind of sets the table for, you know, Donovan had that huge game, but I think his having a great game in this situation is credit to him, but it also is a symptom of an underlying disease of like how Cleveland generates offense. I'll just throw that to you because I know you know and feel the same way.
If you were watching them play, Mitchell is essentially orchestrating on his own, even when it's a pick and roll, it's just those two guys in the action. And Cleveland is satisfied to guard the action with two. Mitchell, you know, he basically got the better of them for enough times. But while he's doing that, nobody on Cleveland is doing anything. And then because Cleveland functionally has four guys that are good, that are playoff worthy, up to snuff, they can help off of a lot of guys when need be, right? And so when Donovan is doing that, nobody else is engaged in what Cleveland is doing. They're never getting the magic in rotation, right? And then when he's off the ball, Darius Garland is trying to create. Donovan has no off-ball game. He's not moving. He has a wonderful jump shot. He's not movement shooting, like coming off of screens and, you know, back cutting and, you know, back screening and all the stuff that we see Klay Thompson doing, the stuff that we see Steph Curry doing, and obviously he's not Klay or Steph, but he is an elite shooter off the catch, off the dribble. Like, he is such a great shooter, but he doesn't do any of that. He doesn't have the classic Dwayne Wade expert ghost cutting game where he's an expert cutter to the basket. So, you know, meaning, and shouts to my man Tom Haberstroh. He did a piece on this years ago and was like, yo, when they did the tracking data, D. Wade had some of the best gravity in the league because he's so good at cutting. Defenses still have to pay attention to him when he's off the ball because the second that they're not paying attention, he's cutting in there for a layup, a dunk, an and one, et cetera. Donovan Mitchell doesn't do any of that. So it has the compounding effect of, yes, he was great today. He dropped 50. But, like, the offense is doing absolutely nothing else. And you can't function. You can't function on a diet of just this guy being consistently way greater than some pretty good NBA defense, man. Like, the Magic were one of the best defenses in the league this year. These guys are long, athletic, flying around. They play on a string. Like, they communicate. These guys are a real defense. And you just can't subside on that. And so when Garland is on the ball, it's just not as dynamic as it should be, because Mitchell, as great as he is, you know, the defense isn't preoccupied with what he's doing.
Yeah, it's really hard, because I think we're seeing this with the Cavs and the Clippers. And I think we've seen this movement in basketball of more of a motion mindset of, like, if you think about basketball being a premise of, like, the pressure within your offense is like, all right, we're going to try to get to, it's coming from one person basically. And then the branches coming off of that or whatever that player chooses to do. Now, if you have a Luka Doncic or like one of these elite pick and roll guys that can just over and over again carry a heavy load. Even Luka needs help, though, we've seen. You know, it's just a hard way to live, man. And when you're Donovan Mitchell, who's probably 6'2", probably. I mean, and then you got Darius Garland, who's 6'1", 6'2". These are small guys. If you're constantly depending on them going downhill, what you have created is a situation where the guys that play with you either need to be really smart cutters, like you were talking about, or the defense has everything in front of them, basically. It's a little bit easier to play that way. And you end up in a situation where you have an Isaac Okoro who you want on the floor because he's 6'8". He's, you know, built like a tank. He's switchable. He can guard people, but he is like hanging in the corner and he catches it and he's like, nope. Like, I mean, the terror in his eyes if he caught the ball. You just put yourself in a situation where it's harder to use your personnel. Whereas if you use them like we were talking about, and I thought this is what they were going to do when they got him, man. I thought that they were going to run these two guys off of more split action type stuff, get them moving around and make the defense pay attention to them. And then you can move Okoro and mix them in.
Both of these guys can shoot. Yeah. Both of these guys can dribble. Garland is a crazy great passer. Mitchell is pretty good at it. Like, they should be more creative at that. But Mitchell, you know, he's convinced himself that he's this one. When I think, like, he should learn how to do some of the two stuff. You know,
I think Garland's more willing to do it than Mitchell, to be honest with you, though. Yeah. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that. And also, and that's the thing, like, Mitchell isn't a natural one. He's not a natural table setter. Like, he's an elite NBA scorer. He's an all-star player. I don't want to take that away from him, but like, just being that does not equate into efficient offense. There needs to be more that goes into it. Then you need to be affecting the defense in more than that way. And I think down the stretch of the game where he's sucking wind and his knee is getting worked on, and it's like, this is your only offense. Like, you have to hope that this guy can be Superman and nothing else. And look, Orlando at the end of the game, by contrast, these guys are getting downhill. These guys are causing rotation. And, you know, guys like Suggs and, you know, Paolo hit a couple of threes. Like, they were able to, you know, if the Cavs defense was elastic, they were able to snap that thing. Mm-hmm. Because they're threatening at different parts of the court.
Yeah.
And so, man, it was a crazy contrast to watch the way that thing, you know, unfolded in the clutch. And Orlando, again, these guys are threatening the basket, making the Cavs send help. And even though, obviously, we've been saying this stuff ad nauseum, the Magic have a shooting problem, don't matter. They spraying out to their guys and they're taking them, which is all you can ask for. And tonight, they made some big, big shots down the stretch. There was a Suggs three, a Paolo three.
Suggs had a great Paolo night. And, Suggs, this yeah. was, yeah, this is
Suggs
one of...
Is the, Suggs is the man.
Exceptional, yeah.
He's the man. You had a Paolo three, a Suggs three, and a Paolo and one, which basically broke this game wide open for Orlando. That's three consecutive possessions they were able to do that. And yeah, man, so now we're headed to a game seven, the only game seven of the playoffs so far. We got one.
Amazing. You know, we got to talk about Evan Mobley. I think this ties. I know. Yes. We're so... I think I can get obsessed with like trying to like optimize things or just get obsessed with like trading the right player to the right team just to see them level up into whatever they're going to become. And I think with the Cavs, what we were talking about, and in this, I wanted to say too, I don't want to make it seem like we're not giving Orlando credit. It was just a little maddening to watch at times. But like, I think if they did play that way and their guards attack space, like you can attack space in more ways than just like attacking the space downhill in front of you. You can, the Warriors prove this, you can attack space behind you. You can attack to the left or to the right and force the defense to focus on those things rather than like, let me just keep an eye on this guy that's going to maybe catch the ball and attack a closeout. Like, I think that would benefit Mobley too. If you were just watching Mobley, like when he's catching in traffic like that, man, he needs to work on that stuff. Granted, and I think that's a big reason why they can't play that way is because his screening and his passing are preventing them from doing that. But he's just got, I don't know, I feel like more doubt has entered the Mobley developmental conversation in the past year than was there before.
Well, I don't want to say that Donovan Mitchell is stunting the guy's growth, but since they've acquired Mitchell, the way that they play, he's not involved. And some people might say, well, look at Donovan Mitchell. He can score 50 points in a playoff game and Mobley can't make a contested three-foot jump hook, right? And so those outcomes are justified. But I think throughout the course of the year, man, you should be trying to empower this guy. And so that when he gets in these moments, he can actually make a play. Like oftentimes he's just getting the ball off of a drive, you know, in traffic, barely catching it, putting it on the floor, defense already recovered. He's taking a off balance, leaner, just sort of shot.
He always looks like he's like compromised. That's always the way he looks. Like, he needs to develop some kind of a basic, even Derek Lively. You watch him with the Mavs. Derek Lively has like two moves. He's like, I'm either going to catch it and dunk it, or I'm going to spin over my left shoulder and hit that hook shot. And it's like, Evan doesn't seem even comfortable doing something simple like that, like even making a decision in space. Whereas on defense, he's been incredible. But yeah, offensively too, I wanted to say too, that like you talked about Paolo. It seemed like Paolo was kind of like, I thought he picked his spots pretty well in this game. You know, he goes for 27 points tonight, and he's 9 for 20 from the field, 2 for 5 from 3. Shared the ball really well. It was just kind of a typical, he's a dude, man. I mean, Paolo is
definitely a dude. Yeah. And you know what I like that they've changed up? When the series started, they had him functionally playing like this point guard type of role, and I don't think he should be doing that. I think when he catches it at the elbow and he can just survey the defense, figure out if the guy in front of him is somebody he wants to attack off the face up, off the dribble, jab step, or if he wants to just power game, back him down, back him into the basket, he could do that. And then he's able to see where the help is coming from. But when they're just like, yo, operate a pick and roll and dissect the defense like you're John Stockton, I'm glad they stopped doing that. Yeah. And his games have gotten better since. He had a clunker like 2 nights ago, but he was damn good tonight. And I think in the role of, you know, basically being quicker than bigger guys and being more powerful than the guys that are quick enough to guard you, sort of like an Amari Stoudemire. Obviously, he's not the same Amari, but that was the sort of theory of Amari as a power forward. It's like the guys that are powerful enough to deal with him, he just blows right by him. And the dudes that are quick enough, he just too strong for. I think Paolo was a sort of wing version of that.
Yeah.
Right. And he showed that tonight. And look, when it was not Mobley on him, he basically felt like he had the matchup advantage tonight. France was able to score efficiently tonight. Yeah, look, man, I'm very impressed by the way these guys have acquitted themselves after going down 0-2. Offense looking nasty and muddy. These guys have fought back. They're sending this thing to a game 7. Obviously, the future is bright. You know, I know a lot of Magic fans think Paolo's the next LeBron James. I guess only time will tell on that front. But these guys are like, man, they're showing their mettle. You know, like, I'm not trying to say this to denigrate their accomplishments of making this series of what it is, but like literally, when the Magic have Strus, Mitchell, Garland, and Mobley. These are guys that should be on a playoff rotation.
Yeah.
And next to that, they're trying to fit in Marcus Morris Sr.
Oh, we got to talk
George
about that.
Niang.
Marcus Morris looked like goodness. Me. It's like a young pickup run. Who's just like, yeah, I hope they don't figure out that I'm the matchup that they should be hunting.
He's guarding Paolo at times, and Paolo's like, bro, I'm going to smoke this old man. Okay, Isaac Okoro. Tristan Thompson got dusted off. Caris LeVert still picking the splinters out of his ass. He can't get off the bench. This is their lineup is just tough,
dude.
Man, it's tough.
You know what this kind of reminds me of? I was going to make another just sort of grab bag note. I was going to say is that like the way the Magic play is not, it's really not like dancing out in space, like individual creation kind of driven stuff. Where so when Cole came in and had that sequence where he beat his man, it was a little like jarring. It felt like, it just felt like somebody gave you a shot of cappuccino randomly. I was like, oh, okay, wow. And it makes you wonder why Cole can't sort of like graduate into a more like involved role. But like, dude, what this reminds me of, and I don't think that this is a mistake, I've said this before in other places, is that like, you know, the same people that built the Bucks championship core built this team. And I see it frequently gives me flashbacks. You know, Paolo and Giannis are very different players, obviously. They do similar things, but it's a different thing. And like the way that team evolved, of course, they had two first round losses in a row, and then they went to the conference finals. They may be on like a 4-year window like that, where they like flirt with the second round and then they get over the hump. That's what this kind of reminds me of in the terms of the way they build this team. And I hope that it doesn't take them as long as it took the Bucks to like really get some good shooting and decision-making around them. How they can do that and not, compromise their length and strength and all the things that they do really well is going to be an interesting question. Because, yeah, they're just physically imposing, man. They really are.
Definitely. And to that point, rolling this into game 7, I really do think the Magic have found something. They understand that there's always going to be a weak point on this lineup to attack. I think they make just enough shots. These young guys on the road, I know I'm going out on a limb here, with young guys on the road in a game 7, I think the Magic are going to win game 7. And a lot of it is I'm willing this to be, because I think they're just a much better matchup for the Celtics than Cleveland is. Like, this rudimentary-ass offense, the Celtics are going to eat that for breakfast, you know. And, you know, like, the guys that they're going to put on the floor against the Celtics, like, no. But the Magic can bring their athleticism, physicality, their energy, man. Like, these guys have a motor. These dudes play hard as hell. That was, like, one of the first things I noticed this season when I watched them play very early on in the season. Like, these dudes play hard all game long. It's 48 minutes of hell with these guys. So I think the Magic are going to win, mostly because I'd really like to see it in the next round against the Celtics. What do you got, Kyle?
Yeah, I lean towards the Magic also. And I think that your point about even if Cleveland pulls this out, I feel like they'll probably get swept by the Celtics. Not that the Magic won't too, but like I just think that physically just they match up better. That doesn't really take much of a that doesn't take much of an astute eye to see. But I mean, I think that physically they could cause Boston more problems. And I just want to see that. And I think in that kind of arc of like working towards them being a real championship core, like we were talking about, I think that that's going to be an invaluable experience for them if they can do it. So, I'm hoping to see that.
58% of the chat picked the Magic tomorrow, man. People might say we're prisoners of the moment, but I liked what I saw from them tonight. And before we get out of here, Kyle, spin this to tomorrow. I don't want to, you know, sort of step on my next episode of Am I Feeling Smart that's going to drop right here on the Ringer YouTube page. But I think this is the NBA Finals matchup. I think the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Denver Nuggets, the team that comes out of this series, is going to win the NBA championship this year. And I cannot wait to watch this series because of that. And so, you know, I'll get to you and what you're most intrigued by. I think first and foremost, I am fascinated by how Minnesota is going to choose to guard Jokic. Are they going to do the Karl Towns thing and let Rudy roam? Karl Towns being a fouling ass maven. It feels like this is courting disaster, you know? But like the letting Rudy roam thing feels like a beautiful strategy. As far as I'm concerned, Rudy is Rudy playing out in space against Phoenix, like being like, "Yo, I'll guard KD on the island. I don't give a damn," type of thing. Like I'm fascinated to see how they deal with that. And then on the other side, when the Timberwolves have the ball, one, I think Kenny's too small for Ant Edwards. And it's just a way more physically imposing dude. Kenny is really good at the jitterbug, move your feet, locking chase around screens and stuff like that. He's great at that, but he is a little light in the shorts. And Ant is going to be more physically imposing in him. So I wonder if Ant's going to be able to beat that matchup and live at the paint. And when they send that extra help, will he have the eyes and the vision and the understanding to spray out and attack where need be? What are you most intrigued by for this series, man?
I'm curious if they even put KCP on him at all. I kind of wonder if they're going to go Aaron Gordon to try to like negate some of the weight in the shorts, like you were saying. I just try to single coverage Jokic as best I can. And then I know that I have an elite guy anchoring me that's going to, and then I switch everything with the link that I have on the perimeter. Because we know that Rudy's going to clean up a lot of that cut game. The cut game is where they paper cut you to death and you bleed out. And I think that that's the advantage that the Wolves have, is that physicality. I think they're going to be able to switch stuff away from the ball, like we were saying, and close gaps and clean stuff up in ways that other teams aren't able to do. That's their strength. I would keep Rudy back. That would be my philosophy.
Man, so looking forward to tomorrow. Want you guys, just a programming note for you guys. We're doing this every single Friday with different Ringer NBA hosts every single time. So make sure you subscribe to the Ringer NBA's YouTube page, man. We dropping so much great content throughout the entire playoffs for you guys. This was just another dope night of NBA basketball. For James Kyle Mann, we will see you guys next time. Peace.